We're doing our class on the Parsha. We're up to Parshat Bo with very little amount of time left. We know that there are 10 plagues. Ve'era has 7, Bo has 3. The easy way to remember is Ve'era, the first two letters are Vav and Aleph, the numerical value are 7. Bo, the first two letters are Bez and Aleph, the numerical value is 3. So you know that Bo has 3 plagues. God tells Moshe, come to Pharaoh, it is I that has made his heart weighted, so that I will make these great signs, and you will be able to tell your children the wondrous things I've done in Egypt. So God interferes and weighs down on Pharaoh's heart. Why is that a fair thing to do? Different opinions among the commentaries. One is that this was to counterbalance the extraordinary miracles he was seeing. In order to retain free will, after seeing all these miracles, he needed the hardening of the heart. That's what balanced out and gave him free will. The second opinion says that this was part of the punishment, meaning there comes a time where one can no longer repent. It's the punishment. What's it similar to? A parent who tells his kid, I'm not going to let you smack your sister again. Don't do it. And the kid does it a second time. And you say, I told you not to do it. Now apologize to your sister and don't hit her again. And 5 minutes later, he hits his sister again. And you tell him, hey buddy, I warned you and I'm telling you to stop. And then the kid goes and does it another time. And then you come to the room and he sees you mean business. And he says, I'm really, really sorry. Really? I want to apologize. There comes a point where you say, I'm not going to let you say I'm sorry or apologize. Part of the punishment is that it's too late. So that's the second opinion, that part of the punishment is that his free will was rescinded. That's Maimonides. A third understanding says that there's a natural instinct to protect ourselves. If someone illustrates that they are much stronger and that they can punish someone, so then even if you don't agree to them, logic would dictate that you should give in and say, I'll do whatever you want, just because you see the other one overpowers you. Pharaoh should have given in, even if he doesn't believe in God, even if he isn't willing to accept that God runs the world and that he's subservient to God. Nonetheless, he should have said he does, just to save his hide, to save his country, and Pharaoh does not. And that is the hardening of the heart. Had Pharaoh wanted to repent truthfully and accept God as master of the world, he could have. God didn't stand in his way. But to have that instinct, to say, I better say it, even though I don't mean it, just to protect myself, that's where God hardened his heart. That he wasn't willing to say what he didn't mean, he wasn't willing to protect his hide. If he would have been willing to accept God as king, then he could have done that. And this opens up a whole concept before us, the idea of im lo ta'aminu ki lo te'amenu. Sometimes the reason a person won't accept that there is a God is because he refuses to accept that there is a God. There is a concept of lo te'amenu. One can make oneself irresponsive. One can make oneself deaf. I don't hear it. I don't see it. No, I really don't see what you're saying. You can illustrate in 15 different ways. And the guy says, I don't see it. Right, he doesn't want to see it. We can become deaf. We can become deaf to logic. Sometimes we are that way. And that's what Pharaoh did. He was lo te'amenu. He wasn't willing to accept it. And that's what the old adage says, don't confuse me with the facts. I've made up my mind. Once I've made up my mind, I'm not so interested in what you have to say. I knocked on someone's door yesterday. And they said, I'm not interested. I said, you know, I haven't said anything yet. And they said, I'm still not interested. Goodbye. I said, I'm not who you think I am. And they said, it's okay. I'm not interested. I said, I'm here to tell you something about your water bill. Huh? Okay. You know, initially they weren't willing to hear anything I had to say. Then they discovered that there happens to be something to do with their water bill that happened to come to me, so I had their water bill, you know.
Okay?
Back to our parasha. So Pharaoh doesn't want to hear it, and it teaches us something about ourselves, the capacity to be in denial. God says, I've hardened his heart so that you will tell your children. Part of what we tell over to our children on the night of Passover is we tell them the 10 plagues. We tell them the process. It didn't just happen in one night, it happened over a year, where we saw miracle after miracle. Now they've just had a frightening plague. The previous parasha ended with the plague of hail. Extraordinary hail. Fire mixed with ice, And now Moshe's coming and warning them, there's tremendous locust headed your way. You've never seen something like this. And everything's going to be destroyed. And Pharaoh's servants say, don't you realize that Egypt is almost finished? Our whole economy has gone down the tubes? And so Pharaoh calls him back and says, okay, go worship your God. Notice your God. Tell me who's going. Moshe says, everyone. Pharaoh says, you kidding? Such horrible things are going to happen to you. No way. Only the men have to go to sacrifice before God. That's what you're asking. Get out of here. Now, Pharaoh uses the term Re'u ki ra'a neged p'nechem. See that evil is opposite your faces. What was he saying? One understanding says, he said, I know you want to run away. I know your evil thoughts. And I'm going to throw it back in your face. No, you're not all going. Leave your wives and kids here. The other understanding says, the evil that you think to do to me, I'll pay back to you and refuse that you let the kids go out. The third understanding says, Pharaoh said, I saw in the stars that there's a constellation called Ra'ah, evil. And I see out in the desert that there will be a lot of blood spilt when you guys go out there. So I don't want you to go because you'll get hurt. And Pharaoh was right. Technically, the constellations revealed that a tremendous plague was supposed to hit us. And that's why after the golden calf, Moshe says to God, Lama yomeru Mitzrayim. Why let the Egyptians say, Bera'ah hotziyam? He took them out under the constellation of Ra'ah, evil. If you're going to punish the Jews now, the Egyptians will say, you see, we were right. We warned them not to go. And God says, okay, I give in. I won't punish the Jews. I won't punish them this way, so the Egyptians won't be able to say that. So Moshe extends his hand over Egypt. Locusts come swarming down. They destroy everything. They eat anything and everything. The Egyptians start pickling them. They figure at least we'll eat locusts. Pharaoh calls Moshe and Aaron and says, I sinned this time. Now please, for this time, forgive me. Pray to Hashem. Let him remove this death. And Moshe goes out. He prays. And Hashem makes an unusual wind come out. And it flies. All the locusts fly away, even those that were in the pickling jar. So the Egyptians are left without locusts. The commentaries from back then, Maimonides and Rabbeinu Hananel, they say it's a known phenomenon in Egypt that no locust will harm Egypt. Even when other countries are plagued by locusts, Egypt won't be plagued because that was part of the blessing, the prayer of Moshe, that the locust will be removed, not a single locust will enter Egypt. That's the fulfillment. So I don't know what the deal is today. Today they do.
Yeah, there was last year or the year before that, there was a massive locust.
Right. So I was wondering about that. Okay, so I don't know. Because Maimonides and Rabbeinu Hananel, they both write, it's a well-known fact that the locusts don't harm Egypt. So things changed because they discussed that the Nile would define the climate in Egypt. Today, I don't know if the Egypt of today is the Egypt of back then. It's probably a much larger territory today. And secondly, the system and the irrigation ditches and the watering of the fields and the whole agriculture and climate have shifted. So I'm not sure that that's relevant. And again, I'm not sure that the locusts that attacked what would be biblical Egypt. I don't know.
We have two parts of the in that time. We have Mitzrayim and we have Patras. Now Patras is in the and Mitzrayim is still there with the pyramid and something like that. But when you talk about locusts, it depends. Then was complete, now wasn't complete.
I don't know. But it says they didn't eat. It says locusts either wouldn't enter or wouldn't eat anything in Egypt. I don't know. Right. I'm just wondering if today, this decade, we had a locust attack. I'm wondering what happened there. I don't know. Moshe brings the ninth plague, and as we found, every time the third plague was without warning. There were sets of three, and every time on the third, it came without warning. So now the plague of darkness settles on Egypt. It was some kind of cloud or fog that was so thick that even if you'd light a match, it would turn out. And for 3 days they couldn't budge. Everything was so thick. They couldn't see. They couldn't move. And the Jews had light. And the Medrash says the Jews would go into the Egyptian houses and look and see where the Egyptians kept all their jewelry and all their valuables. But they didn't take anything. And this is an interesting thing because you guys know what happened in the New York City blackout, right? Tremendous crime. Because people knew that no one could see and no one could call the cops and the cops couldn't do anything. So there was tremendous crime when there was a blackout. In many places in the world, when there's a blackout, there's tremendous crime. Here in Israel, things are much better, right? We had tremendous blackout. I didn't hear of any unusual crime, right? What do you mean you have light? Come to Kochav Yaakov the Shabbos night when we didn't have any electricity. We didn't have light. So Pharaoh calls Moshe and he says, go, just leave me your cattle. And Moshe says, you will also give us cattle to sacrifice. We're taking everything when we go because we don't even know what God will want us to serve. And God hardens Pharaoh's heart and he refuses and he says, get out and don't you dare come back because the next time you come to see me, you will die. And Moshe says, you said a good thing. I'm not coming back. I'm not coming back to see you. And that's true because Pharaoh's going to come see him. And Moshe warns him of the final plague. And here we don't have an accurate understanding when this conversation took place. Moshe tells him there's one final plague. The firstborn will die at midnight. Did Moshe tell them this the night before the plague? Or did Moshe tell them this in Rosh Chodesh Nisan sometime a number of days before the plague? And he didn't tell them when it would happen. So the Egyptians are waiting. And Moshe said at midnight. Midnight comes and passes. Which midnight did he say? So he doesn't say. And that's one opinion. Another opinion says he told them the night before. Another opinion says he told them, but it wasn't the night before, yet he told them when it would happen. Now he's pinpointing a specific date, the 15th of the month, the night of the 15th of the month. The Egyptians believed that they were strongest in the month of Nisan, when the zodiac of the sheep goes up, they worship the sheep. And on the 15th, with the full moon, and the zodiac does a full cycle through the night, they believed that was when they were invincible. So on that night, God's saying, I will show you. In the middle of that night, at the peak of your power, the peak of the month, right? I will show you that your gods will be destroyed. The Egyptian firstborns, they used to worship the firstborns, they believed they were gods. They will all drop dead. And throughout Egypt, you'll hear yelling. The maids' firstborns will die because the servants would also enslave the Jews and berate the Jews. Yes, and the animal firstborn too. God tells Moshe, tell the Jews to go borrow gold and silver vessels and ornaments. And this way, when they leave Egypt, they'll carry all the wealth that they borrowed from the Egyptians. the Jews are given their first mitzvah. What's the first mitzvah? The month. How we sanctify the month. The calendar. When you control time, you control life. One of the reasons people feel out of control in life is because they don't control their time. People don't control their bedtime, so they don't control their wake time. They don't control their wake time, and they don't control the time that they're focused. One of the keys to feeling control in life, if we can use the terminology that Rav Chaim Kanievsky said, the axis on which all of life turns is your bedtime. If you can go to sleep in a proper, responsible way, you take control of your whole day, the whole cycle. Our issue is that we don't. We stay up, we meander, we read another article, we do one more thing on Facebook, we schlep out the night, we end up going to sleep late, we end up getting up late. Even if we get up on time, we're tired. We no longer have control over when we have strength, when we don't have strength, when we're focused, when we're not focused. We are servants to time. One of the great messages of Pesach is that we take control of time. That's the idea of matzah. I control the time. I have to have the matzah ready within 18 minutes. I'm in control of time. I can do that. So a free man has control of his time. A slave has no time. What's avodas parech? The master comes in and says, work. He doesn't say till when. He just says, dig. because the servant's time is worthless because the master owns it. So one of the recurring themes in Pesach is this idea that we control the time. And the first mitzvah is the mitzvah to take control of time, to sanctify the month, to have a new calendar. And that's a chodesh hazelachem. This month is your first month. Throughout the Torah, the months are called the first month, second month, third month. They don't have names. You don't see Kislev in the Torah. Because the months all go back to the Exodus from Egypt. Think about it. The year starts in Tishrei. Yet the months start in Nisan. This is to remind us of this idea. Life started when you left Egypt. Yeah? So you count the months, even though the year starts in Tishrei. Because technically the world was created in Tishrei. But you count the months from Nisan. Because Jewish life began in Nisan. So for us, we start our count. The first month is Nisan. Second month is Iyar, etc. We have a mitzvah to slaughter a sheep. God gave us a phenomenal mitzvah here. God says, take your day of rest, the Sabbath, and take the God that you used to worship together with the Egyptians. We also worship the sheep. Bring it home. Tie it to your bed for 5 days. And your kid's going to ask you, Dad, what you doing? And you're going to say, I'm looking over the sheep. And your kid's going to say, why? And you're going to say, because we're going to slaughter it. So you're spending a few days. The final move before you leave Egypt is you teach your kids, this is an animal, this isn't God. The Egyptians see us on our one day off, our Sabbath, our Shabbat, taking their God. Now in Egypt, if an animal stops in the middle of the street, you don't move. How could you move God? So you go around it, right? Traffic stops. So now we're suddenly putting a noose around the animal's neck, pulling it home, tying it to our beds. The Egyptians undoubtedly had their spies. They knew what was going on. And they hear that we plan on slaughtering their God, a mass slaughter on the 15th, the day they believe their God is strongest. And that's the mitzvah God gave us. The afternoon of the 14th, you slaughter that sheep. And then you take its blood and you put it around the doorpost. So if an Egyptian comes to a Jewish home, what does he see? The blood of his God on the doorpost. What kind of declaration is that? What free men we've become. We no longer believe in this. Next, God says, you take that animal and roast it whole. You know, roast makes smell. If you would cook it, if you'd bake it, no one has to know what you're doing. But if you're roasting it, all of Egypt starts smelling to barbecue.
Like on a fire?
And yeah, roasted on a fire. It must be roasted on a fire whole. So that if an Egyptian walks into your home, he sees it. You can't deny it. So the blood has to be spread outside the door. The animal is roasting whole. And then you obviously, you and your kids are going to eat that animal tonight. So the Jews have gone full circle. A year ago, they were pagans like the Egyptians. They worshipped the Nile, suddenly turned to blood. They worshipped the firstborn, suddenly all the Egyptian firstborns dropped dead. They worshipped the sheep, and now they're being told, take that sheep, and you're going to slaughter it. And you're going to put its blood on the doorpost. You're not afraid. And then you're going to eat that sheep. You're going to roast it and eat it. What free men we were. Now, they're sitting in their homes with the roasted sheep. And outside, they hear yelling. All of Egypt is yelling. You're not allowed to leave the house. God said, stay inside. So now you don't know if there's a pogrom going on. You don't know what's going on. Are the Egyptians coming after you? You don't know what's happening. The Jews were sitting in their homes in utter fear because they were hopeful. God had said he's taking them out of Egypt. On the other hand, remember what happened in the plague of darkness? 4 out of every 5 Jews died. Remember? God didn't tell them in advance people are going to die. God said, the Egyptians will have the plague of darkness. Why did the Egyptians need a plague of darkness? So that they wouldn't see how many people we lost. But the Egyptians didn't die in the plague of darkness. The Jews did. 4 out of every 5. That means the average Jew buried some of his relatives in the previous plague. Now God comes along and says, stay in your homes. No going out. So no one's going out. But they don't know what's going on out there. There's a whole lot of yelling going on in Egypt. Why, by the way, you know why 4 out of 5 Jews died in Egypt?
They didn't want to go.
They didn't want to leave. Because every time we have a redemption, There are those people who say, it's so comfortable here, I'm not leaving.
Right.
It's a very scary thought. Hey, I speak as one who has his whole family in Chutzaretz. I'm the only one here. But throughout our history, every time Am Yisrael was going to move forward, there were people who said, I like it better the old way. So you had the Jews who stayed in Egypt when we came back to the Second Temple. You had the Jews who stayed in Babylon. You had the Jews who stayed in Yemen. You had the... Throughout our history, when we can make a move forward, there were Jews who stayed behind. Jews who said, I'm not for me, I'm good. So 4 out of 5 Jews didn't want to leave. They weren't ready to leave. After all the plagues, they were not ready to evolve. And that's the idea that we have, that as much as God helps us and guides us, there's always a gap. Now, if you think about it, it's like you're crossing two mountains, right? In between the mountains, there's a gap this big. You can just step over it. Or you could put your foot in and say, I'm stuck, can't move. We always have that choice. God always leaves us that free will to say, nah. And you see a lot of people choose that. Because the alternative is scarier. So, here God gives us the mitzvah of Pesach. We're going to commemorate this day that we went to freedom, the day we became a nation. We have a mitzvah to eat matzah. And at midnight, the plague hits. Corresponding to the Jews at home, every night we do something, right? We say the prayer of Hashkivenu. God, let us lie down in peace. Let us make it through the night in peace. That corresponds to the Jews who were praying in their homes at night as the plague of the firstborn struck. And our parsha concludes with the mitzvos of the firstborn, as we discussed, the mitzvah of wearing tefillin, and that the tefillin have within them these two pieces of parchment that declare the mitzvah of sanctifying the firstborn, corresponding to what God did in Egypt with the firstborn, the mitzvah of Pesach, and the mitzvah of the firstborn animal being redeemed. We will discuss this at greater length, I hope, on Thursday night.